In a world where action films are dumped in theaters and TV, dead on arrival.
I can't go on living this lie!
You need a hero.
Last time I trusted someone, I lost an eye.
You need a helper.
Hello, nothing to see here.
You need a healer.
That is affirmative.
You need...
We're on the air.
Professor Rick's Action Film Autopsy.
Hey, everybody, it is... The Action Film Autopsy, and we'll start with the theme song. There'll be spoilers. Yeah, there'll be spoilers. 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 And actually, the theme song.
I thought you forgot the name of the podcast.
I did. For a second, I blanked.
For a second.
What, I was like, what's happened? Like,
what, and our introduction's gone, too.
Whatever. So. Whatever. Well, we're getting to that. Whatever. Normally, what happens is that like so many things, originally, this was Professor Rick's Action Film Autopsy. But of course, it's www.actionfilmautopsy.com. So now, whenever I'm about to say the title, I'm going, should I say Professor Ricks?
I always voted just, no.
That I shouldn't say that.
Yeah.
Okay, well, there you go.
AFA, Action Film Autopsy.
Yeah, there we go. So that's why I paused. But anyway, the theme song is not that relevant on this episode because I am taking the suggestion of one of my co-hosts,
Jen.
Yes, who said, why don't we do a top 10? And I went, you know, I don't care anymore. Action films nowadays, it isn't the way it used to be in the old days. But then, you know, it's January where, again, films go to die. None of us have seen The Commuter, the new Liam Neeson movie. None of us have seen Proud Mary.
I want to just, like, use my movie pass and just buy
we'll see it this weekend.
A ticket. I don't want to see it in the theater, but
exactly.
I still want to support Taraji P. Henson.
Exactly.
So I will use my movie pass, buy a ticket, and then watch it on the DVD in the library.
Well, there you go, and I'll join you for that. But also Hostels I wanted to see, and I still want to see Wind River. But then
Which one was Hostels again?
Hostels is a brand new one with Christian Bale. It's been called the best Western since Unforgiven.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, you know what? I keep mixing that one up with that. What is it? 12 Stronger or something?
Yeah. There's another. Oh. There's a bunch of stuff.
It's like horseback.
Yeah. So
on horseback.
So then I decided, you know, hey, it's perfect since we're all getting together. Let's do a worst and best.
I think it's also fun because you like forget what came out this year.
Amazing.
I say this year, I mean last year, 2017.
Right. When I was doing research to remember, I could have gone through all of these before because we pretty much covered everything because the podcast is more than a year old. But I looked up on the web and I saw titles of movies I'd never heard of.
Mm.
I mean, from all over the world. So, but we're hitting the highlights. So do you guys have a preference as to whether we do worst first or best first?
What's more enjoyable? I guess worst is more enjoyable.
Exactly.
Worst, yeah.
And also, let's get it out of the way.
I was going to vote for delaying gratification, but
you were going to end with the worst.
We don't have to do that because I don't want to be like mean. I'm already mean.
No, please be mean. That's one of the reasons that people tune in.
But I'm also like I try to be understanding.
Oh, do you?
Movie making is tough.
Oh yes, and you ought to know.
Of course.
And we're going to get to that. Well, let's start with the worst, and all of these are in alphabetical order. And so for me, and this is my list, poor Miko and Jen, who have not been able to contribute to the list, I decided today to do this.
That's fine.
So number one for me, and you can pretty much guess in alphabetical order what number one for me is.
Of the worst,
the things I hated the most. And it's not even so much that the action sucks in this movie. It's just that the movie sucks so bad. It drags the action down with it.
I mean, the action was not that great either.
It was an extension of the suckiness of the film.
Oh, wait, don't tell me.
The hatefulness of the film. I'll give you a hint.
Alien Covenant.
Thank you.
Yeah. Oh, my God. You said hatefulness of the film, and I was like...
That's the word for Alien Covenant.
Alien Covenant.
Uh-huh.
Alien Covenant is...
See, I won't be nice to that one, because that one was just like...
That was a hateful film.
Like
it was a hateful...
Bad corporate grab.
It wasn't... You know, it's funny, because the director and semi-writer, he was really committed to the film.
I know. That's why I feel bad, too, because it's just like... I feel like when you have a director that's dealing with a property that, like, they probably grew up, like, loving, it's, like, this
and
weird,
creating.
Like, pull, push and pull. Like, they want to do it right, but, and then, like, they probably get, you know, oversight. I don't know how Ridley Scott was an EP, wasn't he?
Yeah, Ridley Scott is who we're talking about. By the way, another thing.
Did he direct it too? No, he.
Yeah, he directed it.
He directed it.
Oh, he very much did.
I thought he was just an executive producer.
No, he directed.
What happened
I feel like
there?
Okay, that makes it worse because in my when I think about that movie, I imagine like. His entire crew was probably those people who grew up like loving everything he's done, and like nobody's gonna like when the director's on such a pedestal. I feel like nobody's gonna be honest with him when like
he. And also, he was totally in charge. He did what he wanted to do, but the mistake. I mean, again, it was a very well made movie, but it's interesting because I've noticed this about Ridley Scott and other, if you'll excuse the expression, aging directors. As an aging writer, I can attest to this. There's a great temptation, and you can see it with other directors through history, to get really negative about life and humanity as you get older. And some people will fight it and know that, you know, the pendulum always swings and we're always doomed to repeat history. We never not. Matter of fact, we just came from seeing a screening of
The Post,
which is this generation's All the President's Men. And this whole thing, The Post, was all about the Washington Post revealing the Pentagon Papers to rip the mask off of what happened in Vietnam. And while they end, spoiler alert again, with a hint that All the President's Men was coming up. In other words, Watergate was about to come up. Has anything changed? No. A few years later, we're in Afghanistan, we're in Iraq, you know, we're still mired in that stuff. So things don't change. So I understand how some aging creators will get very bitter at the end of their lives. And Alien Covenant was hated human beings so much. And it's not like James Cameron saying that human beings suck in the Avatar's movies. This was not only do humans suck, but let's punish nice humans. Let's punish and torture and torment and kill nice humans.
And so in order to do that,
all the human characters had to be blindingly stupid.
Oh yeah,
stunningly stupid.
Extremely stupid.
What was the previous one? The one before that, where they were stupider, where the, you know, the Ridley Scott.
Oh
one?
Yeah,
the space one. It wasn't an alien movie. It was the prequel to the Alien.
Prometheus.
Again,
Prometheus. The one, I see a snake looking thing. Let me go touch it.
Let me stick my face in it.
That was this movie, too.
Same thing.
Yeah, but even more.
Like, oh, the flower egg opened up. I'm going to stick my head over it.
But Prometheus was. There were more characters who were even stupider. And so
I would disagree. I would say this one, the characters even a little worse.
Yeah, but there were two characters who were very lovable. Who were horribly treated.
Yeah, thought the girl was going to get out of it alive.
Yeah, that's true.
And the way she was slaughtered was really mean, really venal.
It is.
And also the way the girl in the beginning who was attacked by the alien in the and locked
in the
room.
And the girl in the shower who was attacked.
Yeah. Anyway, it's an awful, awful movie. It was the worst. Anyway, I will have in the supplementals, I'll have the crew, the stunts for Alien Covenant were by Kyle Gardner. The fight coordinator was Chan Griffin. And these people are not to blame. The producers and directors are almost always to blame for bad action. Because I've met so many of the stunt coordinators and the fight coordinators now, and they're all great if you let them be. I mean, Yun Wu-Ping, who's one of the great Chinese ones, he's done crappy work in America because, like everyone else, he says to the director, what do you want? What do you want? And if the director isn't well-versed in action, he'll say, well, just give me crap. And that's what they do. So that's number one in the worst. Number two is I like this movie, but we discussed this at length on a previous podcast, as a lot of this we've discussed prior.
Yeah, I think so. We should try to like keep ourselves not like full on a second review.
Yeah, we've got 15 movies
to
get to. But be that as it may, it's Blade Runner 2049 with stunts by Joel Kramer.
And this is your bad list based on the action alone.
Not just the action, the ending action.
Okay.
Because the action in the rest of the film at the beginning and the middle is pretty good. Is pretty well done, as I said originally.
Yeah, well, that's why I was kind of like, oh, I didn't like dislike.
I liked it
in this. For me, it was like everything else was really.
But that ending fight scene, the wrap up with the with standing there and taking the spinning the back kicks 80 times in the face.
The reason why you forgot it is because again, there's so many good ones in the middle where like the Harrison Ford and
the theater fight was.
Yeah, the theater fight was amazing, but like. towards the end, they really just
when they get to the
all of the rules that they establish.
Yeah.
And then all out of the window.
Yeah, the hero is a very effective fighter until the end, where he just stands and takes eight.
Same as the woman.
Eight spinning back kicks directly to the face. The woman is extremely powerful.
The woman was cruel. She finished stuff in one move, one gesture.
Right.
But now she's.
And then the hero grabs her by the throat, and suddenly she can't do anything.
Exactly.
His eyes, his entire face is just within her reach, and she does nothing. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the ending fight scene's not too good. Three, we can all agree on, which is Ghost in the Shell. The action, the movie. Again, it's very difficult to separate the action from the movie. In fact, the action sucked because the movie sucked, but they both had the same problem. It was all superficial. It was all whitewashed. The plot was whitewashed. The characters were whitewashed.
Literally,
the fights were whitewashed. And so it was just generic, empty movement.
United with the mom, the Japanese mom at the end.
Oh, the fact that she was actually Asian all along.
All along.
I, like, forgot about it.
They want her to have the best shell. Yeah, and the best shell, apparently, it's white.
So much
it's
worse.
It's Scarlett Johansson. That is, no question,
but,
that's the best shell.
You find out that she actually was a Japanese girl.
They went.
Yeah.
That was so funny.
Instead of embracing the problem that they had, they tried to find a scapegoat and made it even worse, worse.
But they got beat Takeshi Kitano to get in there and just do whatever the hell he wanted.
He's the best part of that.
His action was
the best throughout the whole thing.
Stunt coordinator for that was Sean Graham. The fights were done by Damien Halfordy, and they had an action consultant who was Anthony Zito. And I guess it was just like, make it more like the original cartoon, except make it human and don't have it have any meaning, just be empty movement.
I was going to say, like, both Blade Runner and Ghost in the Shell are beautiful by themselves.
All these movies are very well made.
Visually, appetite.
Alien Covenant is beautiful to look at, just not to listen to or take in any way. Number four, Power Rangers. What a dropped ball.
Oh, I like
what
that.
What a stunningly dropped ball.
You liked it. It is entertaining, but
I liked it for the wrong reasons. Like, it was a frustrating movie because the build up just took fucking forever. And again, we've already talked about how it didn't know which audience it was catering to. Mm-hmm.
And it didn't satisfy either audience.
No, yeah.
And
I appreciated the, like, character development. Like, I appreciated the slow burn, but then, like,
I hated the fight.
It wasn't a good movie,
the montage,
but I enjoyed
was bad.
It. Yeah. Like, I enjoyed what they tried to do, but then they, you know, it's like,
well,
okay,
it's
like, I'm looking at the clock and I'm like, okay, you can't be more, you have to have only like 30 minutes left, you know, and then all the fighting
happens that's right.
for the last 20 minutes.
It's what we talked about. We were at a IHOP, and we were talking about the various Fantastic Four movies, and the Power Rangers is very similar in that if you want to do the Power Rangers, you have more than a 20-year history.
Right.
Much more, I think, than a 20-year history. Just do the Power Rangers. If you want to make a change, make the change without alienating the people who made it a huge success over the last many decades.
Yeah, I feel like they tried to do, like, an origin story, but then still have the big, like,
and the Breakfast
the big
Club.
Battle. And, like, for me, it's like, now that you said that, I'm like, I think the reason why I'm, like, the original, like, the really crappy, like, the Power Rangers movie from, like, my childhood, I'm like, oh, that one holds up because...
It does.
It was like, you had already... No, because, like... Miko's giving me a look, but it's it works because it's the characters from you had, like, the
psychic
show handles
character
development, however little, you know, whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then the film, it starts, you know, they're already established, they have, like, their team dynamic, they already have their powers, you know, it's not like an origin story. Mm-hmm. Again, it was like,
but then they have the giant robot fighting like they're doing
about
wrestling.
This.
Right, but the whole thing with a lot of the films, recent films that we'd like, you know, redoing a lot of movies in the past is to reintroduce it to new audience.
But that's why Spider-Man works so well, because this new Spider-Man,
we'll be getting to that.
We already know the fucking story.
We'll be getting to that.
It just started in the middle. It was fantastic.
Save it.
That's because he also has a little introduction in the Avengers. But anyway,
but you don't. That doesn't even count.
But Power Rangers blew it on every single level. The stunts were by Jonathan Eusebio, Paul Jennings, and Larry Lamb. The fights were done by Brian Ho, Aaron Tony, and Alex Chang. I can't believe that three different guys did these wrestling fights. It was just basically world championship wrestling type fighting. It was really bad. Number five of the worst, we're doing the five worst and the 10 best, was Resident Evil, the final chapter.
Oh, I didn't see that.
So we haven't seen that one.
I did on a plane.
Wait, was World of Warcraft? No, that was last year.
Yeah, and also that was last year.
Okay, because I was like, what about World of Warcraft and Ninja Turtles too?
Yeah, those were both
terrible. Those were MMA fights.
Yeah, right. The stunts by Cary Grieg on Resident Evil, the fights by Nathan Barris, and prior to their editing, they might have been good. But the editing is hilariously overdone, where a single punch is shot from three different cuts. It's indecipherable, and it just goes on forever. Yes?
No, just saying, like, based on that, what you said, and based on what I saw on the commuter... trailer.
Yeah.
That's exactly the problem. And the exact reason why I'm not watching it. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, you can tell an inferior director when he's so insecure about his action scenes that he needs to edit them with a shredder. You know, it's just a shame. Now we're getting on to the ten best. Excuse me, and alphabetical order. And there's no way I could leave this off of the list, even though it is not per se an action film, even though it is, and that is Coco. The latest Pixar movie, and I was very adamant about putting Coco, not only because it was an extremely effective film that I enjoyed very much, and was beautiful, and it was challenging, and it was interesting, and it moved, and it had music, and it had action, and everything else, it had color, but it brings to mind, I will have stunt coordinators and fight coordinators in every other film except this one, and Coco. Mm-hmm. And also brings up one of my favorite fight scenes of the year, which is in the climax of Ferdinand. I saw Ferdinand. We were going to talk about it this time. Here we are at Blue Sky Studios, the creators of Ferdinand. And I want to ask you, Jen, and you, Miko, who choreographed that? Did someone come up with the idea?
The fight in the third act?
The Ferdinand, the bullfight.
That was Annam.
Yeah,
I was going to say that was actually a good chunk. The third act, a lot of the third act was done really early on. Because Carlos, our director, he knew exactly what he wanted for the ending. And I wasn't on the film in story at that early on. But as far as I understand it, they didn't even do a whole lot of storyboarding for that. It went straight to animation.
Yeah.
So
what happened is that when they have that... So, yeah, exactly what she said, that Carlos wanted exactly what he wanted. He wanted the ending. But then the middle, the fight, again, it's muddy because you want it to be entertaining. You want it to be attention-grabbing and, to build up the tense intensity. But you can't really do that. Well, you could, but you can't really do that.
It's not as effective.
Effective with Story Wars, because you want to see the whole thing in 3D and
especially the ring.
The ring, the volume of the ring. So what we have is actually we have a group of animators called the Ring of Fire, basically knocked out this whole sequence. So everyone took chunks of it and have meetings constantly and try to block out the scene in different ways.
They were like their own entity.
So right. The concept. Who came up with the concept of the bull being the bullfighter and the bullfighter being the bull? Because that's what happened.
That was probably a mix. That was probably a combination of Annam tests and Carlos.
No, Carlos is the director. Annam test is.
Oh, just animation test.
Animation test.
Every show, usually there's before actual shots get down the pipe to animation. Yeah. Usually the characters are ready and they're waiting for inventory, so they'll give the animators free rein to do some Annam tests, some character exploration, and that's usually where a lot of really fun little moments and little character moments come into play.
And that's individual
the director.
Artists.
Right.
That's come up with little ideas.
Yeah. But this one's a little different. Like I said, the Ring of Fire. So the idea coming with Ferdinand being sort of
reverse the roles.
Reverse the roles. It's probably a combination of both where the group of animators came out with the idea. They passed it around. Carlos saw it, probably liked it, and include it into the final product, basically.
Yeah, I tell
you. That's what happened.
You had several major action sequences in Ferdinand. Mm-hmm. Also, the attack of freeing one of the bulls from the slaughterhouse was a very fun scene, very reminiscent of the great Popeye cartoons and that sort of thing. But that final fight, what made it work for me, and Jen, you alluded to this when we were first going to talk about the movie, and you insisted that I see it first, because she said, do you remember what you said? The quote to me?
Probably just something that you would actually approve of.
Right. You would like it. Because, and I did like it because it's in character. Mm-hmm. The final battle would not have worked had it not been in Ferdinand's character. Mm-hmm. I mean, Ferdinand, from the famous story...
He's a pacifist.
Is a pacifist bull. Mm-hmm. Destined, you know, everybody's trying to make him into something he doesn't want to be. He just wants to smell the flowers. Literally and figuratively. Mm-hmm. And so he's forced into the ring at the end.
Right.
And so you set up the situation in what I thought was a brilliant way, because he is trying to avoid, and that's my favorite thing, avoiding fights. Mm-hmm. The whole idea is you want to be aware of your surroundings. This is Kung Fu. These are the laws of Kung Fu. Mm-hmm. You're aware of your surroundings. You want to avoid a fight. And that's what he was trying to do. Mm-hmm. And fate conspired, and also the character of the bullfighter conspired against him, to the point where he accidentally catches the red cape on his horns.
Yep.
And in the attempt to get the red cape back from his horns, they reverse roles, where Ferdinand is unaware that he's become the bullfighter.
Right.
And it's just, it really is wonderfully brilliant and very inspiring. And also, the rest of the scene plays out in the classic Kung Fu way, in that he does not fight. Mm-hmm. He refuses to fight. He wins by not fighting. Yeah. And that was awesome. And I already told you guys the one change I would have made, which is an extremely minor change, and we've discussed it, which is about, I wanted him to offer, inadvertently perhaps, the flower to
them.
Which would cause the audience to turn, because having been in Spain and having seen a bullfight, to get that audience to turn would take something.
Mm-hmm. Take
something. Which I countered that it wouldn't have worked in our particular film because of how much and how little we decided to anthropomorphize Ferdinand.
Right.
It wouldn't be in character
for
him.
Yeah, I would have
I'm just saying for the audience
to
know.
If I had been in meetings, I would have pushed saying, again, do the same thing as you did in the bullfight, which is, he's not actually offering it to it. It just seems like because he has to lower his head or whatever.
Yeah.
But anyway.
So anyway, one more point I want to bring in, just like the fact that a lot of animations had a lot of great actions and whatnot. All of them are the hard work of a lot of story artists banging out in the story process and getting into the animation, and animation adding a lot more life into that.
And character, which is super important, and director picking and choosing
and getting inspired by all the animators and storyboard artists.
This is why, as I lectured at DreamWorks, as I lectured at Disney, this is why it's so important that animation can lead the revolution in screen action, because you have total power over your actors. Mm-hmm. You don't, you know, the actor, you know, Johnny Depp can't say, well, I don't want to do that.
Right.
Or I don't want to be in the makeup. You have total control. So there's really no excuse for not doing what Ferdinand did, not doing what Zootopia did. Mm-hmm. The most memorable action scene for me in Zootopia is when our hero, Hops, is going through the many different lands of different sizes and different characters trying to catch a thief.
Mm-hmm.
And she has to adjust to each environment and each group of innocent bystanders. And that, in order to make a great action scene, I feel you need that kind of, I don't know what you would call it, suspense, conflict, or whatever, but you a comparison. You need to juxtapose.
Yeah.
And that makes me sit up, my eyes widen, and my brain get engaged, because, as you know, most of the time it's just empty movement.
Mm-hmm.
You're just waiting for the action scene to be finished, and it just happens in a very generic way. But thankfully, in most of these best movies, that does not happen. Number two on the best movies is something I saw twice, the only movie I think I saw twice this year, and a movie I again saw with you guys and not here at the studio, and that would be Dunkirk, with stunts by Tom Struthers. Yeah, poor Jen.
Poor heart.
The movie
just weighed heavy.
Jen.
I enjoyed it. Was just like, between the music and just the general tension.
For all my listeners, I recommend you go see really, really, really good movies with Jen, because Jen, when she is affected by a movie, there is no mistaking it. At the end of Coco, I thought her head would start to crack open. She was in the lobby, and usually, as you can imagine, as you both know, I love to talk about it. Mm-hmm. All I want to do is talk about it. All you wanted to do was get out of there. You wanted to get. You did not want to talk about it until you were ready. Until you were ready to talk about
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
And that's the same thing happened to Dunkirk for a different reason. Dunkirk was a powerful, powerful experience. And even though a stunt coordinator was Tom Struthers, the real choreographer was the writer-director, Christopher Nolan, mm-hmm. who had such command of this movie on every level. And all of it was, pretty much all of it was real. Mm-hmm. Pretty much all of it was on the land, in the air, in on the sea. Mm-hmm. And it was a remarkable achievement in both filmmaking as well.
Highly manipulative of your heartbeat.
Oh, yeah.
Using the music.
Using everything.
Building the tension.
Also continuing Tom Hardy's legacy of having shit obscure his speech.
And his face.
And his face. I will never understand. He's playing Venom. And I'm oh, good, you wear a mask in that, too.
It's not until the end of the movie. It's not until the end of the movie where I went, oh, my God, that's Tom Hardy.
Oh, yeah, me too.
Yeah.
And I was just like, of fucking course it was you.
It really is the reason we're remarking about it is that it's a remarkable movie.
It really is. The tension just wouldn't let you have a moment to
I never thought I'd give a shit about a One Direction kid, and I was like,
you didn't even know it was a Run
Oh, I knew it was him.
No, you
that
did.
Was like, cuz all
Harry
of them
knows.
They all broke up, and then yeah. it was like they were all releasing songs, and then I was like, weren't there five? And then it was like, oh, I won't name names, but there's somebody in my department who is a grown-ass man who loves One Direction. And he was like...
They're fun.
It's like, oh, like, this is what they're all up to. And I was like, oh, okay.
I like anything's good. When something's usually successful, usually there's a reason. And even though you may not be happy with a reason, in the case of One Direction and many others, and many other popular boy band and girl bands, there's a really good reason.
Also, this movie just, the characters that died, like, I was really upset.
Yeah, it affected you.
Yeah.
You know, you know where every bullet went, which was really great. And now we get to go to a movie where it's completely the opposite.
Oh, good. I didn't even see it.
We haven't seen it yet.
And I think, just like so many of the movies that we go to that you don't want to see,
this was the one we were in the theater seeing it, and
the ticket was sold out.
You saved us seats in the theater.
Oh, that's
we're talking
right,
about Fate of the Furious.
Fate of the
we
Furious.
Went to Fate of the Furious on
the
like
on
the cheap night, like Tuesday nights in our area are like the
half
price.
And I came early, and you guys came late.
And Rick saved us seats. We got there after we went straight from work, and we tried to buy tickets,
but
and it was sold out.
See, that was my problem. I learned an important lesson.
Yeah.
Not enough to save seats. You have to buy the ticket.
Yeah. Well, mm-hmm. I think we didn't think like those movies are usually crowded on like that discount night, but I didn't think it would be like
sold out for the whole theater.
Yeah.
That's rare.
Yeah.
And it was so
the.
Didn't get
and
to
then
see
we
that.
Never, yeah, we never got another chance to see it. In
yeah, theaters. But I did get to see it. In
I
theaters.
Saw this. This is the eighth one, right? Fate of the Furious.
Seventh.
Oh wait, is this the one where he died?
Who?
No.
Okay. He died in the previous one.
He died in the previous one.
I thought he died in the seventh one.
I thought this is the eighth.
Yeah, this is eight.
This is eight.
Because I was saying we.
Oh yeah,
I was
you're right.
To
it's
say
eight.
That
it's
I.
Eight. Oh, that's right. It has an eight. Fate.
Yeah.
That's why it's called Fate.
Oh, that's super annoying. I didn't know that.
F8. No, I think that's awesome.
They lose points for that.
No,
I was about to say over the holidays I saw the seventh one. We saw it on TV, and I did secretly enjoy it.
And yeah, and you'll enjoy this one too. F8. I saw the poster. I saw the poster today when I was putting the list together.
Not as much as I enjoyed XXX: The Return of Xander Cage.
No, you'll enjoy it even more. F8. They have.
No, is
Vin Diesel. They have. There's enough people in this movie.
I mean, no, but it's not Donnie Yen.
So like, you'll be fine.
Fight me.
F8. F8, they had Vin Diesel's face in F, and they had everybody else's face in 8. Because this is also the famous movie where Vin Diesel
fought,
personally...
Right?
No, they did not.
Oh.
They fought behind the scenes.
Yeah,
behind the scenes.
Oh, they didn't fight behind the scenes.
Oh, no, I meant like in like the actors, like drama.
No, there was drama, but it was... But anyway, Fate of the Furious, this is the one where Vin Diesel personally shot down the after credit sequence, which was introducing the next spin-off movie with Jason Statham and The Rock without Vin Diesel.
Mm.
They're doing a spin-off series.
Wow.
With just Jason Statham and The Rock.
Wow.
Without Vin Diesel.
And he didn't like that?
No, he's not happy about that, but he knows it's going to make money.
It's his film.
But also, they were going to introduce that idea at the end of the credits of this one, and he said no.
Mm-hmm.
If it doesn't involve me, it's not in this. And I don't have a problem with that. That's fine.
Yeah,
but the thing I loved about Fate of the Furious, besides being another fun Saturday matinee movie, was again how wonderfully they establish The Rock's character of fighting versus Jason Statham's variety of fighting. Mm-hmm. Even though the stunts were by J.J. Perry and Troy Robinson, and the fights were by Jonathan Eusebio again, who was, where was he before? I don't know, we'll be getting to him again later. I maintain that the fights were actually, the Rock's fights were designed by The Rock, and Jason Statham's fight were done by Jason Statham. And they're totally and utterly different. And there's a sequence in the movie, which I think I mentioned on the previous podcast, where they establish it, where they're both put in jail together, mm-hmm. and they're across the aisle from each other, and they both start challenging each other in their styles. And The Rock is Hercules. The Rock is The Rock.
He's the scorpion. The
wrestler. He's,
get your shit right.
Yeah, he's the guy who rips the cement block out of the wall uses it as
the ring. Wait. Okay, was that the...
That was the scene... I remember that scene.
The part where he rips the cast
off
his arm?
Daddy's got to go to war.
Daddy's got to go to work.
I quote that movie while we're watching and doing the holidays to her in front of her face right before that happens, because that's such a memorable scene.
I was so angry.
Well, again, I have the Blu-ray of Fate of the Furious, so again, you have to come over and take a look, because I think you'd enjoy it. And then they have that wonderful sequence. The Rock has his fight sequences, which is just ba-boom. And Jason Statham has his kung fu sequences, where they borrow a scene from Hard Boiled, where Chow Yun-fat is trying to save a baby in a burning hospital.
Oh, right.
And he's keeping the baby on his chest and shooting everybody around him.
In the airplane.
No, that's in Hard Boiled, he does it in a hospital.
Right.
But in this, they do it on the airplane.
Yeah.
Jason Statham does it. And it's delightful. And it rises and falls. And it's beautifully done. And that's what puts it on the best list. Now, number four. In the best list, in alphabetical order, is a movie called God of War, which is probably the only pure kung fu movie coming out of China last year.
Oh, okay. I was like, is this that Chinese propaganda film?
No, it's not propaganda film, although they all are.
They all blur together.
Remember, this is alphabetical, so it's not yet, but we'll get to that. God of War, with the stunts by, how do you spell, how do you pronounce Q-I-N?
Qin
Pengfei.
I never would have gotten that.
Right?
Qin.
And the fights are by Sammo Hung, Vincent Zhao, and Soji Kurata, who are the stars. There is some brilliant kung fu, but the thing about Vincent Zhao, who replaced Jet Li in the Wong Fei-Hung movies, Once Upon a Time in China movies, 4 and 5, the thing about him is, even though he's as good as Jet Li and went to the same school as Jet Li, because they all went to the same school if you're doing kung fu, is that he refuses to be showy. Jet Li, and the fellow we'll be talking about soon in alphabetical order, they're willing to amend their kung fu for the camera to make the audience go, to make the people who don't know kung fu go, ooh, ah, neat, cool, just like Bruce Lee did with the nunchucks. Mm-hmm. A real kung fu guy is not going to use nunchucks. They're the least controllable kung fu weapon there is. But he did it because he knew the audience would be super flashy. You have something to say, Mika?
No.
You were making little faces.
No, I don't.
Evaluating his...
No. I was in a joke.
Judging them as
I was
a Chinese
in a jokey
man.
Way. Yeah. I was in a jokey way that Bruce Lee was able to use it really well. But anyway.
Yeah, but that's because...
But that's
what he used. That's what he chose to use rather than choose to use something which is authentically effective.
Right.
Vincent Zhao does not do that. There's a movie he did called Wudang, which is awesome because it has all these people who don't know kung fu or martial arts who are fighting with closed fists and muscles and anger and making faces. And he purposely does this. He's the kind of guy like... my buddy who's a drummer said, you can always tell a drummer at a Buddy Rich concert. Buddy Rich was one of the great jazz drummers of all time. Because they're the ones with their mouths open. Everybody else is just enjoying it. You can tell real kung fu people at a Vincent Zhao movie because they're the ones with their mouths open. Everybody else is going, okay. But if you know kung fu at all, Vincent Zhao will not compromise straightforward, effective fighting. And that, to me, is the most important thing. Not interested in how badass you are. Interested in how smart you are. Not interested in how tough you are. I'm interested in how effective you are. And he's extremely effective. And he goes up. He's teamed with Sammo Hung, who has 5 stents in his heart at this point. And so he choreographs every movie as if it's his last one. And that's the same with this one. And Soji Kurata is one of the great Japanese actors who plays in Chinese movies. And here he had an opportunity to compare and contrast very specific, very realistic Japanese-style martial arts with very authentic, very realistic Chinese martial arts. And if you really want a lesson in that, you watch God of War. All right. Now, number five. Let's see. How many people saw this?
Speaking of not showy.
John Wick Chapter 2.
Did you see it?
Yeah, we saw it.
Oh, you guys saw it together, and I ducked out at the library.
Oh, you missed out.
John Wick Chapter 2.
I don't want to see a dog get killed again.
No dog got killed.
I don't deserve that.
No dog got killed.
You were about to say no one got killed.
No, humans got killed all over the damn place.
The funny thing about this, about the dog thing, too, so, like, they had a scene specifically to show that the dog is in good hands.
The dog is in better hands than he was at
the
end of the last
one. Whatever, the damage has been done.
All right. But anyway, It's the best of this new form of movie that is not going to last, but they tried it a lot last year with Atomic Blonde and an upcoming movie on this list, where they're trying to make the cinematic equivalent of a video game. They're trying to recreate the joys of a first-person shooter game in cinematic terms.
Mm-hmm.
But John Wick Chapter 2 wed it to that really cool underworld idea, the world of underworld.
Right.
You know, the hotels, the rules that this mythical underworld kind. So they wed it to that, but they also wed it to the character of John Wick. And they establish by the end of the movie that this is clearly a samurai film with guns instead of swords.
Mm-hmm.
Because at the end of it, he becomes a character known as Son of Black Mass. There's a wonderful series of Japanese movies, generally known as Sleepy Eyes of Death, but also Kirishira Nomori, and also Son of Black Mass, where he's nihilistic. He travels the world trying to find somebody good enough to kill him, because he's a half-breed. And by the end of this movie, John Wick paints himself
true
in that corner.
Yeah, yeah.
And
at
the end, he starts running.
Yeah.
And I went, it's a Japanese samurai movie, which is something that the star knows very well.
Mm-hmm.
Keanu Reeves knows those movies extremely well. And he's much better at the Japanese-style martial arts than he is at the Chinese styles. When he made Man of Tai Chi, that was kind of an embarrassment. It just showed how little he knew about Kung Fu. But this showed how much he knew about martial arts, and except with guns. And the reloading, the sequences were very clever.
Okay.
It was very repetitive and redundant. And Atomic Blonde did not survive the repetition and the redundancy, nor did this other movie that we'll get to in a little bit. But John Wick Chapter 2 certainly did.
They did.
It was good. Now, Spider-Man Homecoming. Do you have something to say about that, Jen?
I mean, I feel like I already said it.
Yeah. By the way, John Wick.
It felt like.
What?
Never mind. I was saying, I saw a review.
Never mind.
Well, no, because I was just like, I saw a review that, like, summarized how I felt about it really well, and it was like somebody equated it to, like, Hey Arnold. And I was kind of like, I don't know if that's, like, too niche of a thing to reference, but I was like, it felt like Hey Arnold souped up with, like, superheroes and, like, you know, with the stakes escalated.
I might mention that the stunts in John Wick Chapter 2 were Darren Prescott. The fights were Jonathan Eusebio again, Eric Brown, and Justin Yu. Spider-Man Homecoming, the stunts were George Coddle, and the fights were Il-Ram Choi. And that, you could see that. And it was about time they got a Chinese to do Spider-Man choreography. And the thing I really loved about Spider-Man, besides pretty much everything, was the action sequences were done like an animated film. They were done with the character involved. And because they had one of the strongest villains in the Michael Keaton role, and it was clear where the two characters were coming from, their final confrontation, where Spider-Man does the kung fu thing, saving the villain.
Also, I like the fact that the stake was so low.
Yeah, well,
it was literally, I try to date your daughter, and I also trying to be a good guy.
Yeah, but also you're trying to kill everybody because you're really pissed at Iron Man.
Well,
really,
the villain's only trying to save his his operation.
Yeah, but then he gets really angry about it.
Yes, but he never intends to kill everyone. He just intends to kill whoever comes in contact of him trying to become successful and provide for his family. Iron Man took so many people down.
Yeah, but it was still just very humanistic. Yes, you have something?
Oh, no, I didn't. I enjoyed it. I feel like I don't remember, like, what I said on the original review, but, like,
we spent so much time reading each other's faces on this podcast. Uh-huh. We look at each other and then, you have something to say? Nope, not got nothing to say.
Well, no, again, for me, I'm like, I feel like I was probably, like, not like, I don't think I was too, I don't know if I was harsh. Like, I can't even remember how.
No,
it,
you weren't
it's
harsh.
Like, it's one
you
thing,
it.
You know, yeah. It's like a while out where it's like, every you remember everything like more fondly except Alien Covenant. And like,
Well, no, you remember things fondly when they're good.
When they're fun.
Yeah.
They're
well, no,
they're
I mean, I feel like you're at a
memory.
Point where it's like, I mean, even like, honestly, even now, like Star Wars The Last Jedi, I'm kind of like, as like,
I still hate it
as,
now.
As split as I was now, I'm kind of like, you know what, like, it was fine.
But you
like
the fight scenes.
Fine.
Oh, yeah, the fight scene was fantastic.
That's what we're talking about, because that's the next thing on our list.
Oh, good insight.
Star Wars The Last Jedi. Mm-hmm. Stunts by Rob Inch. Swords by C.C. Smith. And the fights by Yang Liang. Mm. Right? And what we're talking about is the fights. We've already discussed this at length.
Oh, man.
45 minutes about.
It's like...
But the fights, specifically...
Well, but there's only
two good fights. The battle with... The first battle.
The first battle in the spaceship. I thought that was great.
Even though the sacrifice. With the Red Guard?
Not with the Red Guard. The Red Guard was great.
That was the second one I wanted to talk about.
The first one is the beginning of this the movie when the pilot basically sacrificed everyone to
that
destroy
was the fight scene?
That was a space fight scene.
Oh, there was an action scene.
Yeah, there was an action scene.
We're talking specifically about the fight scene.
Okay.
Yeah,
so,
the fight scenes, which is clearly the Red Guard.
The Red Guard is definitely one of the few exceptional
fights. And of course, my favorite fight scene, again, the moment that Kung Fu comes in.
Oh.
Which is...
When everything gets, like, shot through astral projected Luke.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, I just
he, like the dust, the shoulder dust bullshit.
Yeah,
I was like too modern of a reference.
Yeah, and I also like see you later, kid.
Yeah,
I mean, just the whole movie was cunning. The whole movie was challenging. The whole movie was not predictable.
Mm-hmm.
And the fight scene between our heroes and the Red Guard was really lovely.
Was lovely, but
it was
at the
all,
same time...
It was all weapon-based.
It was all weapon-based. At the same time, I would love to see a little more sort of like coming all at once instead of one by one.
I understand.
That's like a cliche type
But I didn't mind it in this case because it was the Red Guard.
It was.
So it was, even though they didn't establish their characters, they kind of did by their costumes and their weapons.
They made them into a little bit robotic.
Yes.
Like in terms of their fighting and
all
terms
the same,
of the, like, the logic.
They were probably all Yang Liang. They were probably, every single one of them was Yang Liang. So they had to wait for him to do it.
In the last fight with Luke, that was amazing. Just the fact that, like, you know the intent of Luke is trying to piss him off, and he did his job.
And the emotions. And the emotions of both of them was very good and was very well done. So, now on to 8, which is one that I don't think you guys have seen, which is The Villainous, a South Korean film.
High praise from you, though.
Young Byung-gil was the... It is the ultimate first person shooter cinematic realization. It does get wearing, but the virtuoso sequences of sustaining that kind of brutality. It is also a good example of the problem with things like Atomic Blonde. And to a degree, John Wick, but not so much with John Wick, but certainly with The Villainous and Atomic Blonde is, as I mentioned previously on the podcast, these are physiology-free, pain-free action scenes. Everybody would be so damaged within 3 minutes of these 8-minute fight scenes.
It's like monster trucks in its entirety.
Right. It really is.
Never forget.
I was thinking of putting monster trucks on the worst
list. That wasn't
list.
This year. Oh my God, was that?
I think it might have been at the very beginning of the year.
Oh my God, you're right, because I was so I was properly triggered by monster trucks because we had just been in a car accident in January,
that's right.
And then we watched it, and I was just like, our one accident, like left me like out for like a week, and then like the amount that they were getting jostled in those cars, I was like, abso-fucking-lutely not.
Physiology free. I mean, people are not damaged, and you combine that in terms of The Villainous with the usual South Korean brutality of a plot. The plot where, I mean, whoever made Alien Covenant saw a bunch of South Korean films, because these are brutal, mean-spirited, let's beat up nice people and heroines and heroes films. Let's torture them, let's torment them, let's ruin their lives, let's make sure they don't get out unscathed. But still, the virtuoso cinematic fight scenes in the villainous are worthwhile, but I highly, highly, highly recommend that you watch it in segments. Watch the first fight scene, stop.
Bend it, and like do what?
Do other things. Go watch television. Go, you know, draw a picture. Go have a meal. Then come back and see the next one. Is seeing them one after another is just like kind of like being beat up.
Mm. Like in a good way or a bad way?
Well, you have to decide.
Okay.
My decision was having seen it twice and having shown it at the
Kung Fu Extravaganza. Because I get like reading a book, like it's like you're reading a book and then like something really heavy happens. You kind of have to like, I was one of those
people.
Just
do something else.
I would like put the book down, I'd do a lap, or I'd go pet my dog, and then I'd have to come back.
Right.
It might be the same thing.
That's what you want to do with villainous.
Yeah.
Then we've got Wolf Warrior 2, which you guys haven't seen yet, but I have.
I want to see both that one and Villainous.
All right, well, I'll show them both to you. But, you know, we'll have to have breakfast, then a Villainous fight scene, then lunch, then a Villainous fight scene, then dinner, then a Villainous fight scene, then dessert, then a Villainous fight scene. Wolf Warrior 2, it's one of those movies that was kind of like made for me, even though it was also made for $800 million worth of the Chinese audience.
Yeah.
But as an American who's not a Chinese, who didn't grow up in China or Hong Kong, I started smiling at the beginning of that film and I did not stop. My smile just got wider, 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 and wider because I have been waiting, not whiter, wider, because I've been waiting for Wu Jing to take
his...
I've been waiting for Wu Jing to take his rightful place as the king of Kung Fu for decades. In fact, in my documentary I wrote and was consulting on, which was Films of Fury, the Kung Fu movie, which I believe is still available on iTunes and other places, I forced the directors and the producer to take out Jean-Claude Van Damme and put in Wu Jing. And Wu Jing at that time had only made a couple of movies and a couple of really great television shows. So it's, and also, again, speaking of your favorite, I maintain that Donnie Yen, when he became king of Hong Kong and Chinese Kung Fu, he kept Wu Jing down because he kept everybody down who could threaten his position. That's my, I maintain that on the basis of
his
behavior.
We can bond over our deep insecurity. I love it.
Okay. There you go. I'll introduce you. I know him. But anyway, I'll get him and Wu Jing to the Kung Fu Extravaganza. Oh, believe me, you do not want to hang with him in life. Believe me. He's married. Anyway.
I mean.
And you don't care. Wolf Warrior 2 is extremely
clever. I was going to joke that I basically am, but.
I know. I guess you are. But anyway.
Okay, break it up. For now.
You don't give up, do you?
Listen in next time for more film, fun, frenzy, and friends. Until then, check out actionfilmautopsy.com, where the excitement never ends.
I'm not going to take an American hero and play him. Like Jackie Chan did in Armor of God, where he was doing basically Indiana Jones. And the Chinese love that because they like seeing one of their own do America One better. He said, I'm not going to do America One better. I'm going to do China One. I'm going to create a hero. The Chinese, just like Bruce Lee. Bruce Lee decided that he was going to create a Chinese Superman for the Chinese people. Not a reflection, not a shadow of an American or an English film or any other kind of film or an Indian film or a Korean film. I'm going to make something specifically for the Chinese audience.
You know, he's the only one that crossed Chuck Norris. Anyway, sorry.
Oh, my God. I'm telling you, what he does here to create that character, especially after Wolf Warrior 1, where it was kind of like that was his kowtowing to the Chinese government to say, please give me the money and freedom. I will be faithful to you. I will be patriotic to you. I will be jingoistic for you. I will do your propaganda. But now let me do what I want to do in terms of creating a hero specifically for the Chinese people who's recognizably Chinese. Mm. And he does it. And he does it he does it really obviously. But he also does it extremely cleverly because he talks to people on the surface and he also talks to people deep. He's getting people's eyes and minds. And that's so rare in a Chinese film now. You know, now almost all Chinese films are eye candy. There's almost no mind candy.
Mm-hmm.
But Wu Jing manages to give the impression, and that's one of the great works of cleverness and smartness, and it's a magic trick where he gives the impression that there's no mind candy at all in this, but there is. And sometimes you just watch his feet, mm-hmm. and sometimes you watch his eyes. Oh. And it's like, oh my gosh, you're so smart. I love you so much. I hope to see you next year.
Quick question about that. If you haven't seen Wolf Warrior 1, you have. Okay.
You don't need to see it.
Okay.
Nerf Warrior 1 is... It's interesting to see Wolf Warrior 1 because it's the same schematic.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, it's the same basic plot structure. In that one, he's fighting what's his name, who was at my show last year. I'll remember it. But in this one, it's Frank Grillo, and also what's cunning is he's letting Frank Grillo be called. He's letting it be called Frank Grillo's Wolf Warrior 2 in the rest of the world.
Oh yeah.
Also, just a little context.
Yeah.
So this movie make about like, what is it,
$800 million.
A little bit more.
In China alone.
And that in Chinese money, mm-hmm. if you count it, it's roughly like $5 billion, like $700 million.
Like U.S. dollars? Million yen.
Like Chinese yen. That's $5 billion.
Billion.
Imagine a movie in the United States ever making $5 billion.
Wow.
On domestic alone.
Wow.
What's so astonishing about it is he made it in such a way that nobody knew it. Nobody knew what he did.
That's insane.
And what he did was nobody knew why they loved this. No, they were all just.
I'm like so pumped to see this.
It may completely go over your head, but it may not.
It totally will. I'm like probably gonna hate it.
But I'm gonna be spending. I'll be doing
not
a lot of this.
Not even hate it. Just be like, I didn't understand it, and therefore it frustrates me.
Right. Mm-hmm. But I'm gonna be during the whole movie going, watch this. Anyway. Number 10 is by alphabetical order. It's the last movie on our list, but it's also, as far as I'm concerned, the best action movie of the year.
Oh, see, I don't even know what's... Oh, wait, I do.
Yes, you do. Say it.
Wonder Woman.
Wonder Woman is not the greatest movie of the year. Dunkirk is better.
Yeah, that's why I had to think about that.
Coco is better.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms
I
of...
I think the CG
of
is
the
better
effect,
than the other ones.
In terms of the specific fights and the two landmark moments beyond the rest of the film... And the wonderful performance and wonderful direction, and the establishing of a female hero that, of all time, just brilliantly done, when she literally reveals herself on the World War I battlefield and does it because she's right.
Because no man has crossed the valley of death.
Hashtag iconic.
Yeah. You know. Time's up. Hashtag time's up. About time. Hashtag about time. And then the final moment when she chooses love and then eradicates the God of War like a bug.
Against this film, he looked like such a generic World of Warcraft villain.
Yeah, he was.
Him and the one from Justice League were, for a second in Justice League, I thought it was the same guy.
Wolfenstein.
Yeah, Wolfenstein in the Justice League movie.
Yeah, that's like a very generic.
So I will say that as a peg against it.
I was going to say, last scene... Because she basically used his power against him.
And she uses the power of everything. She uses the power of love.
Yeah.
She uses his energy, just again, the highest form of Kung Fu, just like in Kung Fu Panda 1. It's not to fight, to make your enemy your friend, or if you can't
do
that.
Redirecting the lightning.
Taking their energy and giving it back to them. Giving it back to them, just like Doctor Strange does.
It's like Aang, but then he doesn't want to kill Fire Lord. Okay.
But she's powered because it clearly shows at the end of that movie that the power of hate is not anywhere close to the power of love.
Mm-hmm.
Power of love is so great, and I've seen this in real Kung Fu for the last 20 years, that I can attest to it. And so the fact that they did it in the movie is just celebratory.
Yeah, her love for humanity was so strong that even though she realized that men are not evil just because Hades, she still loved men.
Right.
And that's
the most important thing she loves is herself.
Oh, yeah.
And she shares her love of herself with all
humanity.
With everything. And if she, she chooses love and the energy comes out of her crossed wrists and ba-boom. So anyway, so there you go, folks. The worst and the best, as far as I'm concerned, from 2017. And, you know, we will be back hopefully soon. And I hope you'll be here to see it and everything else and hear it. And I'm just flabbergasted. So now, I guess we'll wrap up. For the very first time, I missed my sign off. On the last episode, because I was interviewing the amazing Kenneth Tsang, mm-hmm. So I didn't want to tell him to use your blinkers, jackass.
That's fair.
So I didn't. So, but this time I will say to all of you,
use your blinkers, jackass, and chew your damn food, Rick. I might have added a damn.
Okay, break it up, break it up. For now,
you don't give up, girl.
Listen in next time for more Film Fun, Frenzy, and Friends. Until then, check out actionfilmautopsy.com, where the excitement never ends.
Sonic Victory.